This is Where Did the Road Go? Our aim is to explore the fringe, to be true skeptics and question openly, to investigate the paranormal, bring light to the dark corners of history, and give a voice to the shunned of science. We deal in mystery and the important questions that these subjects bring to light. What is reality? Who are we? And why are we here? Join us on the web at wheredidtheroadgo.com for a full show archive, links to all our social media, upcoming schedule, and much, much more. Now, join your host Soraya on this week's edition of Where Did the Road Go?
Welcome to our first show of 2015. And this is part two of our listener stories. Initially, I was only going to do one of these shows and see how they went. But tonight's guest, Todd Kelly, had a very incredible Bigfoot story. And initially, he didn't tell me this in response to me asking for stories necessarily. He just shared the story with me a while back, beginning of last year, actually. I think he initially contacted me to tell me the story. And I asked him to come on for this and tell his story. And the story got pretty long, so it went the full hour. So instead of cutting it or editing it, I'm just going to let it play, let Todd tell his whole story. And you can judge for yourself what you think of it. The thing with stories like this, normally you could say, well, maybe, you know, he was mistaken in what he was seeing. But there's so many details here. I think we're left with two conclusions. Either Todd is lying to us and making the story up, or Todd saw exactly what he said he saw. That doesn't mean necessarily that they're what they seem, but again, I don't think we can say that this story was a case of misperception, as it might be in a ghost encounter or something like that, where it's very quick or very off to the side or out of the corner of your eye or something like that. He had a very extended encounter with what appeared to be Bigfoot-type creatures. Now, how do you separate the stories that seem like bull and the ones that don't? Well, one of the things about paranormal phenomena is you don't get a lot of good pictures or hard data to work with. You have statistics, you have stories, but you don't generally have that perfect picture. And when you do, it turns out almost always to be a fake. For example, if you look up Dr. Reed and the screaming alien, Jonathan Reed claimed to have a whole encounter with an alien in the forest who ripped his dog in half and then he turned around and killed it and claimed to have the body and pictures of the spacecraft. And I mean, it looked pretty fake to me. And it was proven pretty conclusively to be a hoax. And that's the thing. The first thing that comes to mind, though, when you hear a story like that, when there's so much physical evidence, when you don't normally get this much physical evidence in these cases, you say, something seems wrong. So why is that? Why are these phenomena so hard to pin down, so hard to get a picture of? Why is it so hard to get a good, clear picture of a UFO or of a ghost or of a Bigfoot? I mean, especially a Bigfoot, if these are flesh and blood creatures, someone should have a good photo of it. The Patterson film is a decent video. I know there's a lot of questions as to its authenticity. I feel that it might actually be an authentic video. But it may also be that these phenomena exist in sort of another world between our consciousness and something else. So they do have some physical existence, but it's not in the same way that everything else we're used to in our world does. It might be that it's a one part us and one part them. And so it doesn't exist in reality quite the same way. So the pictures end up being blurry or cameras end up malfunctioning. In this case, Todd didn't even try to take a picture of it. He felt it would be disrespectful, and I get the impression he was very, very scared of what was happening to him. The question is, if he tried to take a picture, what would have happened? Would he have gotten a picture? Would the camera have malfunctioned? Would it have just been a blur? Do these things exist in a way that, say, the chair in your room exists? Or do they exist in some sort of interactive state with us? Do they only exist when they're encountering us? Is that why we don't find remains in the woods and things like that? Do they need us on some level to exist here in this reality? It's a hard question because we don't fully know what reality is. We only have our senses, and our senses are, well, quite unreliable. It's kind of like an eyeball trying to look at itself. It has to use a mirror to do so. It can't look directly at itself. And that is how we view all of reality, through reflections, through interpretations, and our brain will also translate a lot of that data. So what's really out there is far more of a mystery than I think people really accept or realize. Are there flesh and blood Sasquatch out there? Well, there are plenty of researchers who will say an absolutely, definitely yes. But there are also those weird stories, and maybe the paranormal aspect of them are just copying the real creature. Or maybe there's no real creature in the same way as that chair. Maybe the real creature is really an interpretation of something else. We may never actually know the answer to this, but stories like this I find fascinating. So I am going to give the rest of the hour here to Todd to tell his story. And here we go.
All right, so we're here with Todd Kelly, and Todd has a very interesting story about a Bigfoot encounter.
Bigfoots.
Bigfoots, yes. Are they Bigfoots or Big Feet at that point?
Well, you'll have to ask them that.
So where were you and what happened?
I was in Amicalola State Park in Georgia. I was beginning my... an attempt at a through hike of the Appalachian Trail.
Hmm. Okay.
I took a Greyhound from LA out there because I was money wise, and I was trying to save every little bit of money I could possibly save so I can stay on the trail as long as I could. Got caught in Winter Storm Titan's wrath, so I got to spend the night. Yeah, I got to spend the night in Dallas Greyhound station along with. Well, 400 other people who were just as smelly as I was. I was a big thing. And then I got a little food poisoning in Mississippi, I believe it was. And I did everything I could. And I was successful. I kept it all in until I got to Atlanta. I got right up to the state park from a guy I hired. And then I took it easy at night. And then the following morning, I got up early with a couple other hikers and started my attempt.
Okay.
The first thing, there was a big waterfall there, about 640 steps. It was pretty strenuous, and I got through that. And there's two approach trails. These aren't the Appalachian Trail proper, but they're approach trails. And I took the Lenfoot, Lenfoote trail, and it was the easier of the two. And I did that. And now, once I got into this forest, again, I'm not familiar with this forest. It's a broadleaf forest. And this was March 5th of this year. So there was very little canopy, if any canopy. There were some pines. There were some laurels and mixed in, but mostly these very tall, thin, I don't know if they're oaks or not. But the forest itself was really still, man. It was no wind, not even a wisp. I heard a couple woodpeckers, but there was like no bird activity. And I'll back up just a spell, and it could be also that my guy who drove me up there, then eventually some of the staff at the park told me that the Army Rangers had been up there going on 3 days prior to my arrival doing maneuvers. So I think they scared a lot of the game away, maybe, or which will lead eventually to why I think they maybe picked me out of. I started on the trail, and it's beautiful, and it's going to be a new chapter of my life. You know, I 6 months, and, and this is day one. So I start my hike. And okay. So pretty exhausted, but I'm going at a snail's pace. My pack came at 42 pounds, which is very good as far as long distance backpackers go. And, I take several breaks, and I speed up a little bit. I get to the good stuff. I make it to Lensfoot Hiker Inn, and I took a rest there. They were closed, but they have an open air entry, which is a bunch of old rustic furniture made out of limbs and bent. So I take a break there, and I consult my Appalachian Trail guide. There's a guide that tells you about elevation gains, next town, water sources, for the entire trail, which is nice. So I'm looking over that, and I know that I'm not going to be able to make it to, it's called Mount Springer. That's where it officially starts, going northbound. There's a camp not too far of that where a lot of people will park their cars in the parking area there and just camp there. And I kind of, from Linfoot to there is probably about almost 4 miles. And I knew about 1:45 in the afternoon. And I knew that I didn't have it in me. I was running on fumes, but I knew there's another shelter that was about 2 miles before that, and it was outdoor shelter. So I was gonna make it to that. And I was consulting my AT guide, and they told me I had almost 2.5 miles to go. So I felt that the rest I took was enough, and I get on my way, and shortly after that, the trail turns into a single track. Now I'm through some thick trees and brush, and I realize I'm tripping over, my legs are spaghetti, I'm tripping over every root, every boulder, so I decide I'll take another rest, and after all, I think I have 6 months on this trail, what's the hurry, I come along, and there's a little bank, not much of one, and there's a bunch of green moss there, and I'm like, that looks really inviting. So I take my pack off, and I lean against a tree opposite side of the single track trail, and I lay down on the moss and across my legs and put my feet up, and I kind of put my hat forward a little bit. I was going to take a little nap, maybe, who knows. And I was actually thinking, this is the life. But that was my very thought. And then I heard this, if you ever heard a tree coming down, there's an initial pop. I used to work with trees, and I heard that pop, and I bolted up. It was just a natural behavior. It wasn't like, hey, I think that might be a. I bolted up, and I see this tree coming down right at me. And so there's not much area. Yeah, so it was not much area for me. I'm not going to run. So I step to the right, and the tree misses me by about 10 feet. I'm like, wow. I mean, it's a dead calm day.
Yeah.
And so I fall, and when the tree hit, there's a little sign of rot in there, but the tree was green. The tree was alive. And the canopy, the limbs of the canopy, there's a lot of plasticity still in it. So the tree was alive. So I followed the tree back to where I think there would be a stump. And that's when I saw the first giant.
Okay. And what did he look like?
Well, the sun was over his left shoulder, so it was a silhouette. I could see the highlights in his over his. He was colossal. He was colossal. So the tree itself was probably. And I go through this in my mind all over and over. I'd say 35, 40 feet.
Mm.
And then there he was, and there was a berm that he was behind, like standing behind. So I could see from his waist up, and from the waist up. Well, the first thing that got my attention were the shoulders. And I wrote this in my note that you saw, but the first thing that popped in my head is like those old-time barbells, those rounded barbells, or rounded weights at the ends.
Right.
And then the trapezius was the second thing that was just so over the, just outrageous. And then the head, it was a kind of conical-shaped head. I think it was like a natural mohawk of its hair, because it was kind of poignant. And it was just standing there, and it took me about a good 2 seconds to absorb what I was looking at. And then I kind of went to a little bit of shock. So it wasn't yelling, screaming. It was just ominous, just there. So I turned, it must be some sort of mammal mechanism, because I turned my head. I just turned around. I saw enough of what I wanted to see. I turned my head, I'm grabbing my pack, and then a part of me turned around again to look it's just to clarify if I was seeing things or if it was actually there. So I turn around. I kind of whipped my head around with my pack in my hand. It was gone.
Wow.
And there's there's this tree stump. And this is sound a little schizophrenic what I'm about to say, but my rational mind then spoke up and said, "See, there, that's what you saw. That's what you saw, this tree stump." And I laughed out loud. I laughed out loud at the absurdity of it. I actually laughed out loud to the thought that this tree stump, it would take 15 to 20 of these tree stumps just to fill in the area from this waist up. It was just, so I laughed. And then all of a sudden, this berm, which was attached to this outcrop, this rock outcrop. So essentially the berm was the outcrop that hadn't been eroded away to exposed rock yet. And there it was again. Now it's hiding behind. And this thing, for it to move that silently in 2 seconds. But now I'm looking at it, peering over this outcrop, and I don't see any more highlights, man. It's India ink black. That's all I can say. And I'm looking into this blackness. I know it's the head. I know there's a set of eyes in there. I'm just looking at it. Now I notice where I think its shoulder should be. It's trying to conceal itself. It wanted me to see it, but at the same time, it's trying to conceal itself. And right where its shoulder should be, there's a mass there. This is black as the head. It was pulling. I don't know if they can dip their shoulders or not. I don't know if they're double jointed, but it was trying to conceal it, like tuck its shoulder in behind this boulder. And I thought that was really odd. So I have my pack in my hand. I put it on, and I'm heading down the trail. I'm continuing down the trail. There's no way I'm going to make it back to the state park because I'm already, over 5 miles into it. I can barely make the next 2 miles to the shelter. So here I go to the shelter. And now I'm hiking along. My ears are like deer ears. They're pointing backwards, listening for anything, And you better believe it, buddy, but I'm not tripping over any more stumps now. My rational mind again speaks up. It's like, hey, man, that was some critter, you don't hear anything coming up behind you now, do you? And I kind of put it out of my mind. I'm hiking. I'm trying to, So, moving along, I get about a mile down the trail. All along, I'm listening. I don't hear any more commotion. There's no more trees coming down. I'm still not, I'm really uneasy, and I'm still a bit in shock. I'm still, So I come to where the Lensfoot Hikers Trail. It crosses a forestry road, and it's called Nimble, like Johnny B. Nimble. Nimble, like being well, Gap, G-A-P. And it's kind of eerie there, I'm like, wow. But there's flat ground there, and a lot of it too. So I'm standing around going, oh, okay. And all along, I'm kind of looking around the woods. I'll say this, before I went, I kind of researched the Sasquatch thing, as I understood that they're noisy and they crash into brush, and, there was none of that happening here. So I'm like, okay, well, if that was one, he's not around me now. Okay, cool. And so I didn't get enough of a rest, and, now it's around 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I got some daylight left, and I decided to take another rest. So now the trail opens up and it's a lot of area. So I put my pack against a tree again, and the forestry road to my left, and I go up, and there's a rock ledge, overlooking this really steep slope, a lot of rock debris and there's timber shooting up. But ahead of me is, I guess it would be the Smoky Mountains, this mountain range after mountain range. It was really, there's a magenta, a purple, and there's all these different shades. It was really beautiful. So I'm on this rock sitting down, and just admiring the view. No more trees falling, no more. So I'm like, wow, okay. So I'm looking at this view of mine, and I'm also looking down at the rock, and I'm looking at the mica, and here it is, bam, down below, and an echo reverberated against the other mountain's walls. And I look down, and here comes a, this tree's probably 50 plus, falling uphill at me. And I know right away it's never going to reach me. But so I stand up, I jump up anyways, and it crashes against the hillside. I'm like, what the? Huh. And yeah, so I follow the tree down to the stump. I can see the stump this time. You see the green wood is just sharded. It's just like, there's like a stick of dynamite. I'll mention, these aren't pushovers. These trees are snapped. And the first tree was probably maybe, I don't know, I'm guessing, man, just from the other trees I've had, eight inches round, not diameter, but round. This tree, man, it was probably a foot round.
Wow.
And it looked like a stick of dynamite had just broken off about 3 feet up off the trunk or off the ground. And there he was. There, the black one again. At least that's what I think it is. It's down there and it's staring at me. And I'm staring at it. And I'm just, now it's sunk in, man. It sunk. I'm looking back in time. I'm only saying this now because I wasn't thinking it then. This is what it must have felt like to be when we were living in the tall grass, coming out of the trees and in the savannas, you know. That's why we all live on coastlines now. We want to get as far away from those forests and jungles as we can, you know, because of this. You know, this is, so I'm looking down and it's looking at me and I see it look over, it looks over to its left. And that's when I noticed the second one. And this one, I always keep saying butterscotch. That was the height. The sun's behind them still, but I can see, I can make out some facial features because the sunlight's coming off the hillside and bouncing back into them. And so this other one was a redhead for the most part, but it had butterscotch like that highlights. Hmm. So they're looking at me. I'm looking at them. They're not coming up the hill. And I knew now that that tree was not meant to hurt me. It was meant to get my, I don't know, was it meant to get my attention? It certainly did. So, and now what I'm about to do is, I have a couple of friends that have said, you did what? I yelled down. I said, yah, hey. I yelled down, yah, hey. A hello that maybe they would understand.
Right.
I now know it's yah-tah-hey, I think. But I said, yah, hey. It was quite organic. I was actually in, kind of taken back by how it just came out of my mouth. Well, it registered with them because they both looked at each other. They're not craning their necks looking at each other. They kind of had a, their necks did bend, but they also, the upper torso had to bend a bit. They looked at each other like, after I said that, they looked back up at me. And they're not running up the hill. So I think I understand what they're saying. And a part of me, this naivety thing, because I did some research, are these really the forest, the gentle forest giant? Are they taking me to the big guy? You know, what's going on here? I mean, I'm really naive. I take my left arm, I bend it backwards behind my head, and I extend it like pointing up the trail. I do this. And after I do that, I walk away from the ledge, and now I can't see them anymore. I can still see the tops of the trees that are on that slope. I grab my backpack, and right when I do that, all hell breaks loose down there. All hell. It sounds like there's a caterpillar down there going through the brush. I thought they were coming up the slope at me, so I turn around. I thought they were coming up to get me. So I'm watching. But what I'm seeing instead of them coming up the slope is the tree line moving in a lateral fashion, being just shaken. All these tops of trees, like something big is hitting them. So I can see the progress. What they were doing is moving laterally on the slope the way I pointed. That's what, yeah, man. And the echoing off the reverb off the surrounding canyon walls down there, it's just brush popping, them snapping. So I thought to myself, what have I done? You know, what does that arm backwards forward mean to them? I mean, I really, you know, I'm being comical now, but then I was, and at that point, I also make note that it was pretty profound what was happening. There weren't any more tomorrows, and there wasn't surely any yesterdays anymore. I was like, I didn't have a family anymore. It really sunk in, like, holy shit. I'm in the situation of a lifetime.
Right, right.
Yeah, man. So I get my backpack on, and it's uphill for a while. I can see the trail going up this. And this mountain range isn't like the Sierra Nevada. It's pretty round. It's pretty old mountain range, so it's been weathered down. But it's still, you know, somebody, we had an EVA food for a couple of days, you know, and it's a 42-pound pack. So I suck up some air, and I go, and I take my first step over my right shoulder. It's this, just this loudest rock pack, just right real close. There's one of them behind me. And I didn't have the way, I didn't, physically, my body did not want to see what was behind me. I put my head down, and I started hiking up. I was expecting it to, you know, touch me, and at any minute, I'd be leaving the ground and being slamming at the tree. That was my, so it never happened, but, so, as I hike, I can't help it. I have to stop. It's taking my pack off now. I just lean myself in the pack, backwards up against trees, you know, catching this breather along this 2 mile stretch of trail I'm hiking on. And about every 45, after into every break I'm taking, the rock crack would happen again right behind me. 45 seconds to a minute. I got that as, these are your marching orders. Okay, your rest is over. But every time after a rock crack, and these are like boulder cracks, I mean, and the impression I got, the height of the, it had two rocks in its hands. That's what I can always, there wasn't like hitting rocks on the ground. The sound was traveling from up down to me. But it would give me rest. Now I know that they got plans for me. Where am I going? After every rock crack, and every time that happened, it would go right through my chest. You know, it was very concise and powerful. These clacks. Clack isn't just a wrong word for it, but
yeah, right. Well, I can see what you're. I can imagine what you're saying, though.
Yeah, it was just defeating almost. I mean, and people say, I've told other people this, you know, the fight or flight thing. There's a third option. It's called acceptance, man. How am I going to fight these guys? And surely, how am I on my best day? How am I going to outrun them?
Right.
You know, the ball is in their court. So, after every rock crack, there was a wood knock up ahead, like back. You know, so I know there were. So eventually, these breaks happened, and the rock cracks happened about 4 or 5 times in the 2 mile period hike. And I come up to the Black Gap shelter, and it's the most horrific sight I've ever seen. I mean, there wasn't bodies everywhere. It was just the shelter itself and the setting that it was in. It was just, this is where they brought me to. And I'm thinking, how many other people have been snatched from this? I mean, is this where they come to? You know, and it was just red. It was just, but this is, you know, this is where they got me to, and they haven't taken me yet. I'm still alive, you know. So I get to the shelter. I can't wait to get that pack off my back. So I do it. And I think you probably see a picture of the shelter. It's a three-walled, open-face shelter.
Right.
I take my pack off, put it on there. The second I put the pack down, I get blasted by two barred owls making calls. And I say barred owls. Yeah, man, it's either these two barred owls were mic'd up to a marshal, or they were 2 9-foot barred owls, or it was 2 Sasquatch trying to come across as barred owls. I don't know, because here's a screw. It was really screwy, man. They're directing this call at me. I mean, they were calling to the east, or it was directly at me. And there's 2 of them, and they're both looking each other up. They're getting whip each other up into this frenzy. Is this when they come through this? No, I'm in Laurel. There's laurels around. I mean, are they going to come through this brush? And just the last thing I see is know, them. And the last thing I feel is can't slam against a tree. But the one on the right, they were doing that back and forth, they're just whipping each other up, man, into a frenzy. I know that Bart Owls, you know, I've heard them in Oregon, but I'm not familiar with any of the on the east side. But the one on the right here, this is the person I called. The one on the right got so excited. I think it tipped its hand to me. It was very stylish how it happened. It went from the without break, without transition, the smoothest transition, it went into a chimp screech call when they get really ripped up a chimp. That I can't do it, but you know,
yeah,
that
I know what you mean. Yeah,
yeah, but it was very stylish. It was just really remarkable. I mean, it was just really remarkable how it transitioned that into this chimp call. That's when I knew it was them. I mean, and I've been thinking about it over the years, or since then. Do barn owls imitate what they hear in the woods? I think they do. And if those were barn owls, they were imitating Bigfoots. And do barn owls follow Bigfoots around the forest waiting for a meal? All these thoughts are coming to my head. The brush hasn't parted yet, and they haven't revealed themselves, but it was so, Soraya, it was so loud. Either they were 9-foot owls, or they were the Sasquatch doing calls.
Wow.
So I'm like, holy, I can't wrap my head around this. You know, I'm like, why me? I'm looking around, why me? I realize I think I look like what I do. I had a camouflage bunny hat on. I had an army sweater on. I had beige hiking pants on. My boots were tan. My pack was olive drab. You know, I had an old canteen felt container that I put my camera in on my chest. You know, I looked like an army ranger. Are they mistaking me for an army ranger? You know, I think this is what's happening. So, I got some advice from a fella that's written some books. His name is William Jedning. And he said, before I left, I go, what do you like to do? He said, just go about your business. If I took it the wrong way, maybe I did, but I went about my business. I went to get some water where there was supposed to be some water. I get to this, it's about 1/6 of a mile off the trail. Because I'm down to about 4 ounces off of water. I go down into this ravine, and it's dark. And I'm getting the GBs looking down in there. I don't go down it, but I can hear company on my left. I can hear company on my right. I can hear the brush moving around. And I'm not looking at them, but I can hear them. They're there watching me, see if I'm going to go down into this ravine. I decide not to, and I decide, you know, if they let me live, I'm just going to have to deal with 4 ounces of water for the night. But I mean, I'm up there. Yeah, 4 ounces of water. That's it for you, buddy. So I go back to camp. I'm sitting there, and I'm so freaking exhausted. I have one of the easiest tents to set up in the world. I don't even want to do that. I just want to lay down in that shelter in my sleeping bag. And then a part of me thought, like, you know, quit stopping them from just grabbing me by the feet in the middle of the night. And then also I thought, like, what's stopping them just picking me up in my tent? But the tent, I decided to do the tent purely on a psychological level. It was like a little womb to go into. That's, you know.
Right.
My tent's it's a half dome too, and it takes less than 10 minutes to set up. So I pull myself together. I get enough energy up to put my tent together, and by now it's a little after 6 in the evening. I climb inside, and without any effort on my part, I crash. I pass out of exhaustion. I'm out cold. Now, I'm out cold, sleeping.
Right.
And then in my sleep, I hear, I don't know if you ever had, if you ever heard your voice in your head scream at you to warn you not to do something or to avoid something or to, you know, stay away, you know, but I'm dreaming. And the voice in my head, I hear this voice, it's faint, and it gets louder and it gets louder. It's that voice in my head. It's got me out of a couple of car accidents. It doesn't always, so talk to me, but it's screaming for me to wake up. It's screaming for me to wake up. And I do, I bolt up. Now I'm in this woods. Winds are just howling through these woods. All the action's about 15 feet up, but there's still wind down at my level on the tent.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, what? I'm like, so I grab my phone, I look at the time, 10:10. It was 10:10. I'm like, why did my voice, what is going on? So my, I can't see anything because I have the rain fly over my tent. So I'm just, my ears are just, I'm just trying to listen to, is it a bear or what am I? I hung my food up. My food is in my tent. You know, and I'm, you know, it's about 6 or 7 minutes into it. I'm listening. I'm starting to hear, okay, that sound is my tent, or my rain fly flapping around. That over there, those two trees are rubbing against each other. So I'm starting to hear the main personalities in the storm. But I'm just like, why did my voice tell me to wake up? And then, and I'll say this, I've never been one to cry wolf. I never went, so, but I heard, I heard footsteps coming up to my tent, and what I'm going to tell you next is, I felt its gravity.
Hmm.
The first guy who bought the tree, I felt its gravity. Just by looking at it and being in that close proximity to it, it had its gravity, man. It had a gravity. That's the only way I can describe it. Whatever is outside my tent had this enormous gravity, and it was dire. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't Saint Nick knocking on my tent door. You know, it wasn't the peaceful giants of the woods, man. I was terrified. And then, you know what? And, you know, I'm not a macho guy. I can take care of myself. I had enough. I was going to confront it. I had a knife right by my sleeping bag. I had a nice knife. That wasn't coming with me because it would have done nothing. I was going to go stand up to it. At least, you know, face it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I make my move for the fly on my tent. And it hit me. Talking about infrasound. I don't know. But I had this, it paralyzed me. And this wasn't sleep paralysis. I had been up going on 10 minutes. I'm cognizant. I'm lucid. Paralyzed. It first hit me with fear. It was this dreadful fear. Just fear. Like, I've never felt fear before.
Huh.
Now, I was only yell no on my way out of the tent. Like, I was going to yell, no, this is not happening to me. You're not going to reach in this tent and grab me out of it. That's when that paralyzed me. So I never got to go out the tent. I never got to say no. I couldn't even say no. The only thing that was working for me were my eyes. I could move my eyes around. This is when I really panicked because it could have its way. I mean, it could have its way with me regardless. But now I don't have I can't even stand up to this thing. And I kind of got upset that it wouldn't allow me the opportunity to face it. You know,
uh-huh.
You know, now what horror, what hell is awaiting me, you know? And so I'm on my, I have my right arm as a pit, like as a brace holding me up while eventually I fell over because my arm gave out. So now I'm laying on my side and it's crushing me in this fear. It's not crushing me with the paralysis. That's already happened. But the fear keeps getting more intense. And I'll say it, and I don't take it anyway. Anyone who's been in a situation will maybe understand what I'm saying. It was otherworldly, this fear.
Mm-hmm.
It was otherworldly. It was like, and that, I, it, 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 enveloped me in its reality. This fear didn't belong to me. And it was like the original fear, the first fear, this energy. I was an astronaut within this blackness. Eventually the tent went away. I was in this blackness. Just blackness. It was just, yeah, man. And then the voice in my head spoke up real loud and it made itself clear. It said, when it said this, it was something else in its way it said it. It was like, if you don't get this right, you're dead. So what it said to me was, vibe it back. Like, vibe it. Boy meets girl at a bar, vibe. Vibe it, mm-hmm. it back. And that's all it said. I'm like, it came to me intuitively. He's like, you deserve to be in this forest. You're not doing anything wrong. Pull up all those memories as a kid, hiking in the canyons in Southern California, watching the bighorn sheep, catching lizards, swimming with stingrays in the Sea of Cortez, any talking to birds in the forest in Oregon. Pull all those things together quickly. Hold them together. I did that in my mind. I held my breath. I could pull my breath in, and I just held my breath, and that's how I vibed. I kind of just thought of a bubble around me, and I presented those images in my head to it. How do you vibe a Sasquatch? I'm going to try this. I did it. I got a pretty good set of lungs on me. It got me out of some serious drowning, near drowning incidents in rivers and ocean stuff. And I can manage with I can hold for minutes. I can probably manage this for about 15 seconds. That's all I can hold. I was being crushed, literally, in this fear. So I exhale. And it then proceeded to crush me further in this fear. It just laid it on me, man. And I thought, okay, well, I didn't do it right. I'm going to die. So I'm laying on my side. And my tent is essentially a mesh canopy with some, I can see through the mesh. And I'm looking at that rain fly, waiting for it to unzip. And I'm waiting for it to reach in and get me. And I wouldn't say I was crying, but I just figured I was going to die any second.
Right.
All of a sudden, the process stopped. The fear went away right away, just instantly. And then I could hear it step back because the windstorm is still going on. I can hear at the ground level, it's breezy. It's a breeze. But mm-hmm. 50 feet up, it's howling up there. Just howling. And the moon was out, but it was a crescent moon. So, it was this eerie, coming through my orange rain fly, it was this eerie blue-orange. But it was there. And then, so I'm laying on my side, and I wonder how long I've been out, or how long. I was too afraid to even reach for my phone, so I didn't want to see the phone lighting up in my tent. I didn't want that thing to hear me move around in my lying long sleeping bag for fear that it didn't take what it had just given me seriously. I didn't. So I laid on my side for, oh my God, I don't know how long, but long. And I had to urinate, and I held that. My kidneys or my back was killing me. And I'll say this, I had an empty Gatorade bottle in my tent just for that very reason, so I wouldn't have to go outside. But I reached for my phone ever so slowly, and it just seemed like hours I was doing this. And it felt like it was scanning me through the tent, kind of enjoying its work it had just done to me. That's what kind of thing it was enjoying itself. So eventually I roll over my side, I get the phone, I pull the phone into, I have a three-season sleeping bag, Arctic rating. So I went into my sleeping bag and I kind of turned the phone on in there, and it was 11:11 now. So it had only been an hour and a minute. It seemed like hours. I don't know if I was missing time or, but I was conscious the whole time. So, all of a sudden I get a feeling that it's backed off. It's still here, but it's not my tent now. So I move about, I rotate my body, I move positions in my tent. I work up enough nerve to urinate. I And then I lay back down. I'm not going to sleep now, man. I hear.
Right.
I don't know how long it's now been, but a while later I hear a pair of footsteps coming from this trail, and it's still wind going on, but you know, I can hear bipedal footsteps coming up on the trail. And then the footsteps stop, and I hear conversations. And the conversation, it didn't strike me as like monkey gibberish or anything. It was like two people discussing that they should stay the night at that shelter. And I'm like, are those two hikers hiking at this hour at night? Because I didn't see headlamps. I'm like, that's really, if these are hikers, the moon ain't that bright, and they're hiking out. They're hiking in the middle of the night without headlamps. But it went like, you know, it was like, so you want to do, I don't know, that's what it sounded like. I couldn't hear, make out what they were talking, but there was a cadence and replies, and it seemed like, you know, I thought, are these rangers doing maneuvers? Are they like a scout team? And if so, that would explain why I don't see headlamps, because if I wear night vision. But why would they be standing out by my tent if there are two maneuvers? I mean, I was just trying to think of anything. I'm like, or is this them discussing what they're going to do with me? I can't see out my tent. I don't know. Then the conversation stops and the footsteps walk away from my tent. Hmm. Like this trail. So I'm laying there still. And then a while later, I couldn't tell you how long because I'm not looking at my phone. I'm saving my phone's juice in case I have to call somebody, you know.
Right.
I'm not just Facebooking people going, oh my God, you know, I'm in a forest. I'm still very concerned. I don't know what's in store for me. So I hear footsteps coming back down the trail again. It's just one bipedal human trespass. I don't know. But all these footsteps I'm hearing aren't thunderous, ground-shaking events. They're just, the ground is very hard to hear. The gravel being crushed onto the hard clay, that
right.
sound. And the footsteps would come from the trail up to my tent, took up a portion of my tent because behind me was a creek bed. So they would walk out of the tent, stop. It was like pacing, like trying to figure out what to do. And then I'm thinking, well, if this is a ranger, why isn't he asking me if I'm okay? He must have seen these guys, you know. Why is it someone, because I'm not going to come out of that tent until I know who it is. No, I'm not coming out to confront them anymore. I don't want, you know. So anyways, the footsteps coming to and from the trail happened the remainder of the night into the morning. And eventually I pass out again. And I get up, and I wake up. It's probably about 4:30 in the morning. I decide I'm going to stay awake until the sun comes up. I'm not going to unpack. I want that sun. I felt safe knowing the sun's coming up over the mountain range. I felt
right.
Daylight, I guess is what I'm saying, daylight. So I waited. Daylight comes. I got a new set of legs under me. I pull my tent up. I hightailed out of there. I take some pictures along the way. As I hike, I feel like I'm being watched, but I don't feel like I'm in any imminent danger. So then I get to Mount Springer. Well, I wrote in the logbook at the shelter prior to me going into my tent what was happening to me. And then I also wrote at the notebook up at Mount Springer what had happened to me. And the guy that I hired to drive me up there was just happening to be dropping somebody off in the parking lot a mile and a half down the way. So I get there, and then he says, I'm not going to drive you back to the, I'm not driving you back to Atlanta. I'm going to keep you in the shelter for a couple of days, let you think about it, because, hey, man, you came all the way out here. And he didn't believe me at first about the Sasquatch, because I lived here my whole life, and I ain't never seen one. I'm like, why do people always say that? you don't get to see them. It's like, I hike here in Southern California where there's mountain lions. And you hear these people, well, I've never seen one. That oh, that means they're not here. You know, okay. So, but that's what happened. And I'll back up just a bit too. Before I get into my tent, the owls, I had my fingers up, the owls made a series of three calls. They made a series of three calls while I was there. And after the second call, there's only one of them, but it was real, it was way over the top loud. And I'm sitting at the shelter, and the sun is now setting, and it's this whole woodland is a ridge behind the shelter. And all that woodland was just orange. It was this really psychedelic orange. I heard footsteps coming up. There's a female hiker, and the shelter's maybe 170 feet off the trail. You know, I'm 6'4". At that time, I was 225. I had a beard, you know. All by myself. I wasn't going to talk to her, and she wasn't going to talk to me. She just kept hiking. I just, etiquette told me not to even approach this woman, you know. She hiked up into those woods. I watched her. And that was the only humanity, the only person I saw. And I certainly hope she made it, but I'm certain she did. But yeah, so the next day I get back down to the shelter. I tell everyone at the hiker shelter what happened. You know, I have to. I have to. And they're looking at me like, you know, of course, we got to like find some mushrooms up there, man. I'm like, no, I did not find any mushrooms up there, man. You know, how do you tell? So far, yeah, man, I became that guy. I became that guy. So then I tell some of the staff down, well, I'm at the shelter. I make some phone calls to a buddy of mine in Tucson, and I made a call to some family here in California. Like, I'm okay. This is what happened to me. So I've been at the camp now. I've been down at the state. I'm back at the state park. I've been down there for a couple hours. I head down to the gift shoppy area to get a cup of coffee. And I come around this corner, and one of the guys at the shelter heard my story, was telling my story to some of the staff and the ranger down there. So I come around the corner, and the guy's like, there's a guy, I saw a Bigfoot. I go, Bigfoot. I corrected him my way. I go, Bigfoot. So I tell the story, and the staff are looking at me like, you know, they're not rangers per se. Some people beef jerky and patches, and, you know, they fix clogged toilets. They're doing a great job, but there's one ranger, this one woman. She was looking at me the whole time I was telling the story, and she was watching me tell the story. And I get to the point where I'm with you now. She pirouettes away and goes into this door that I watch other rangers go in and out of. What she's doing in there, I don't know. She's making phone calls. But I was never contacted by any other rangers. After 2 days, I get a ride out of there. And, you know, here we are. I'm talking to you now.
Well, good.
Yeah.
So let me ask you this.
Sure.
What is your impression? Were they physical creatures, or were they supernatural or paranormal in some way?
They were physical. Now, with that being said, now I'll tell you what they look like, though. They, all of them were very top-heavy. They had river stone shaped heads. Now, a river stone is, you have a lengthy part of it, and you have a narrowly widthy part of it. The lengthy parts were, say, where the ears were. So it wasn't, they didn't have long heads. They had wide heads. And the trapezius is, man, it's like from the earlobe down, it was where the neck, and that's where the head was submerged or encased in that trapezius. And what I could see from them, I think, you know, there was a little bit of brush in the way, but they, 55% ape, 45% human. That's what I got from it. Yeah, the one, the butterscotch color one, I could see him better. And they had like a black leathery type skin for the face. Now, I thought about this, and I've read it. You know, I'm not a researcher by any means. You see my Facebook post. I don't put much up about any of that stuff. I'm carrying on with my as I were. But you know, We people, we have 12 strands of DNA, 10 of which are turned off. We operate with two. Suppose these things, let's just suppose they have 12, too. But what if they have 9 or 10 of their strands of DNA turned on? Would they need to know if Beyonce's lip-syncing at the MTV Music Awards? Do they need a PlayStation? Do you know where I'm going with this?
Yeah.
Do they need Nike running shoes? You know? Do they need, you know, Armor All, leather
right.
protected for their cars? No. You know? Now, if they have those other strands turned on, why would they need a spaceship? Why would they need technology to traverse time? I don't know, but I didn't see any. I think this. I'll go back to the second three step. I never saw the butterscotch one until the darker one looked that way. I looked to see what it was looking at. Now I'll say this: that forest floor was leaf strewn, you know, leaves everywhere. I don't know if there's just the color of its hair as a camouflage, but the butterscotch one kind of just, I don't know if it was me finally realizing it was there, but it kind of appeared. Meaning, I think it was blending in to its surroundings, so I didn't see it.
And right.
So the big guy cued me to it. And that was the only real, like, did it manifest like in a puff of smoke? No. But all of a sudden, there was another one there. So I'll also say this. If that butterscotch-colored one was, say, spider calling on the desert, on the forest floor, you'd be hard-pressed to even see it. So was it on all fours and it reared up? I don't know, but there was nothing. I didn't see. Yeah, they didn't dematerialize them. So, yes, they were flesh and blood. But I'll go back to that. Like, hey, what if all their DNA's turned on and they do have abilities that, you know, the way we people are, we can only see through the keyhole, man, you know, to the other
right.
side. When you see a fraction of the total availability of light meaning information, that's about us. So, you know, they were flesh and blood, and I don't think people, when they say flesh and blood, I don't think people fully understand. I think what people think is, if you can shoot it with a bullet and kill it, it's not supernatural, you know. The whole,
okay.
The whole universe is supernatural, you know, but I didn't see any evidence of any dematerializations or telepathy, none of that. They didn't talk to me. They didn't yell at me. They just, yeah.
Now, did you at any point try to take pictures of them?
The thought crossed my mind, but right away I thought that would be a death sentence. I was not going to disrespect the situation I was in or disrespect them. I was dealt a hand of cards. I was in a game I knew nothing about, and I really wanted to not get hurt. I'll tell you this though. When I was at the tent before I went in my tent, and I was like, you know, I got to play every card I have. If they are telepathic, I just thought to myself, this is how frightened I was. I just said quietly to myself or out in my mind, I just asked them not to hurt me. You know, I asked them,
right.
I said, I deserve to be here. I love nature. I'm not who you think I am. I'm not an Army Ranger. I just asked them for mercy. I asked them not to hurt me. I never told anyone. I told my one friend that, but I asked quietly. I had to play every card. Are they telepathic? I have to, you know, what harm is it going to do? So I asked them not to hurt me. So, and I, you know, there's a part of me that at the end of the day, they let me go.
Right.
There's a part of me that would like to think maybe I had something to do with that. I'm not fooling myself. I think I got myself out of that jam. They had complete control of the situation. They let me know that. They had a plan for me. And when they let me go, They knew I was going to go tell a story. They watch us. They know that we're verbal. They're social.
Okay. You didn't finish hiking that trail then?
No. I 2 days later, I was on a Greyhound bus heading to Tucson to my good old buddy's house to, my family. I just, they're not available for this. They're just so far out of their paradigm. And I wouldn't, so I had a buddy of mine and we go back way, way back. And I just took it from Georgia to Tucson, man. And he had a little villa down there. So in the desert, I just hung out there for 4 or 5 days, then I my mother was worried. So I came up to Irvine here to talk to her and let her know that I was fine. And then it really threw a monkey wrench into my hole. So, I'm working again. I'm saving some money. I'm going to get back in those woods again, but not those woods. I part of me, like I was saying, wants me to go back and, it's a very romantic notion to hike 2,000 miles. And, in my book, I hiked that entire trail in 24 hours. I get it. I get it. And the record breaker. But
the Smoky Mountains too have a lot of weird stuff associated with them as well. So it's not surprising that's where it happened.
Well, since that happened and a little bit prior to it, if anyone is interested, you gotta skip through the hooey on this subject and get to it, and then you'll find there's a marrow there, and that marrow is where the accountability, where could people, you can find out a lot. And I guess that Smoky Mountain chain is, and the Appalachian Trail, it's easy pickings. I mean, and he had David Pilates on. These park rangers, bad for business, man. If people are getting just snatched off that trail, it's easy pickings up there. I tell you, I've looked into the Appalachian Trail. I mean, there's a good number of people, but the Smoky Mountains, like you're saying, has a long history, as do other forests in North America, a long history.
True.
But I think that one, like you're saying, I've listened to some of your other shows and your other guests, there's a paranormal thing. And paranormal is a word that means that we don't understand. That's all it means. We don't understand yet what's happening, and so we can only talk about these outward symptoms or manifestations. But there's a lot of connections with these are they Neanderthal? Yeah. But
well, I also find it interesting that some of what you described is similar to what people describe in UFO encounters as well, but without the UFO element to it. Like the feeling of fear you had has been described in UFO encounters. Even John Keel mentions it in the Mothman Prophecies.
Yeah, I'm a guy that I'll listen to anyone. I have an open mind. Are some of these guys chips? Are they microchips? Are they do they answer to a little gray master? Or and if so, why?
Or maybe they're both different faces of the same thing.
Yeah, the thing when I saw these things, they were made of the mountain. That's why they were made of the mountain. And you can hike a mountain, you can climb a mountain, but does that mean you really, I'm not trying to be corny here, but do you even know the mountain?
Right.
The mountain, they were just as burly as the trees and the rocks that they were walking over. Just encountering them and being in that close proximity, there's something more going on here. And they come from the earth. They're just You know what? These things aren't selling Cub Scout cookies at the local supermarket. They're not helping little ladies across the street. They're not going to the confectional booth once a month. You know, they're so far outside of our cushy little lives that we lead. You know.
Right. Right.
I don't live too cushy of a life, I always think, you know, people say, don't hike alone. I can't help but think that, because I handle myself in a way that just, as long as I was still walking and living, you know, I didn't get any phone reception up there, but if I had somebody else with me, would I be here talking to you, or, you know, would that person freak out? I think what was going on is, I've been going through this in my mind, it all depended on my reaction to them. Because they were testing with me. Seeing what. So I think, you freak out, you're dead. I'm not saying walk around, peacock around and calling them out for a fight. John Wayne stuff. But if you're, you know, it's like that little kid standing up to the bully in school, man. Doesn't mean that little kid wins the fight, but at least he stood up to him. You know, he didn't.
Right.
He didn't. He didn't run to get somebody else. So I think that's what the situation was for me. You know, Did this kid see that I've been knocking trees down? I mean, you know, but
I also find it interesting that it happened at a point where you were changing your life too.
Well, that's the thing, man. That winter storm. I mean, the winter storm wasn't made for me. Millions of people were affected by it. Don't get me wrong, but it was a fight for me to get on that mountain. But I was dogged determined to get on that mountain. Even a day after, you know, I was weak, I had to be on that mountain. I had to be on that mountain on that day. I was determined to be on that mountain. There was nothing was going to stop me. And it just, that was day one. That was my first day. My first 6 miles, you know, so, you know, what a trip. I mean,
I'm sure it changed your life.
It has. And I don't know in what way yet. I'm the same old me. Well, you know, but I don't know. You know, it's like, do I write a book about this? Do I, you know, you're the only, you know, I haven't been on any other radio shows. I'm not, you know, when I posted that thing on Facebook, I shared it with my friends because it happened to me. And a lot of my friends, I think they know who, if they know me, there wasn't any ridiculous comments being put up there. I mean, I put myself out there to dry, man. I put myself out there. It happened. Right. I had to share it. I see some weird things in the forest. I lived in a couple of forests in Oregon in the cabin out in the middle of nowhere, you know, when I was chopping wood, but this was undoubtedly life. Like I said, I think it's still reverberating within me. I don't, like I said, I still dream about them. The dreams aren't horrifying. It's just, I'm always trying to point them out to people. I'm like, see, there they are. Or I'm alone with them. You know, only one time in one dream did I feel like they wanted to eat me. But the rest of it was just like, I'm always hiking alone. I mean, it's always at night. And I know they're around. And a couple times in my dreams, I can speak to them. I'm talking to them. But so,
interesting.
But yeah, so to the deepest, darkest depths of my psyche, yeah, it affected me and it's changed my life. Like we talked about before, I will go back into a forest, you know, and I just, well, you know, I'm down here in Southern California, and like I said, I'm working right now, saving my money. In the next 10 months or so, I want to travel up the West Coast, but Mount San Jacinto, Jacinto, the great mountain, is rocky. I used to go up there as a kid, look for arrowheads. I'll visit that place. It'll be my first forest to visit. It's down in Palm Springs. I'll do that first. Be kind of like a coming home thing. Hopefully, you know. Then the Redwoods, and I'll head back to Seattle to see some of my friends this next fall. But
Well, I thank you for sharing the story with us.
Thank you.
A fascinating encounter.
Yeah, I run it through my head, not as often as that, but you know, I 4 or 5 times a day, I'm still trying to make sense of it. Like, you know, and like I said, when I go to sleep, I 3 out of 7 nights now, down to 3, before it was 7 nights, you know, but yeah, so. But I thoroughly enjoy your show, and I'm glad that you wanted me on, and I thank you for letting me share my story.
All right. Well, thank you.
So that was Todd's story. Take it as you will. Make of it what you will. If nothing else, I found it to be a very interesting story. It seems that people liked these listener story shows, so maybe we'll do one again in 6 months if I can collect enough interesting tales. Until then, we'll have plenty more for you here in 2015. I have a new website coming up, and next week we're going to have Alex Sakaris from Skeptico on to talk about his new book on consciousness, which is entitled Why Science is Wrong. The week after that, I'm going to have Dr. John Ward back on the show, and we're going to be dealing with occultists like Dr. D and such in medieval times. It should be a very interesting show. And the 31st of January will be the first show of our third year, and I'm hoping to have something kind of like we had last year with Aaron Gullius and Mike Cleland. We'll see what I can put together. And until then, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. Head over to www.wheredidtheroadgo.com. Here's Nightmares from Psyche Corporation. I'll see you next week.
Shut the closet door. It's under the floor. The monster's there. Don't leave me here among these ghosts. You promised me nothing. The day I was born, you promised me hellfire. You were so sure I grew up waiting for demons to find me. I grew up hungry for ghosts to define me. Give me the nightmares, cause death doesn't scare me. I want the vampires and I want the glory. Suffering, offering doom, 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 doom. Sick of waiting for your curses to catch up to me. Burn me, chew me, slake me, thrill me. I don't want the unicorn. I want the bloodsucker. Modify the uniform, cause I'm a monster. Sick of waiting for your curses to catch up to me. Burn me, chill me, slake me, thrill me. It's